Welcome to B2B Better, a podcast that exists to explore what modern-day B2B marketing looks like. If you work for a company with long sales cycles, has a complex value proposition, and simply pouring money into ads won't see you hit your growth goals, this is the show for you. My name's Jason Bradwell. Let's get into it. Hey everyone, today I'm delighted to be joined by Callum McGranahan, Director and Head of Paid Social at Social for Good. Running a niche service-based business myself, I wanted to chew the fat with a fellow agency owner on how to run a modern-day prospecting campaign that delivers real-world results. And with Callum and the team having reinvented their own strategy over the last 12 months, he's the perfect guest to break this down with. If you're a marketer trying to find new ways to unlock commercial value with a one-to-one, one-to-few outreach strategy, this is the episode for you. And before we get into it, I would like to thank once again SoPro for sponsoring this episode. They've just published an awesome report, The State of Prospecting 2024, which offers data-backed practical advice on how to optimize outreach in order to stay ahead of the competition. So I'm going to drop the link to the report in the show notes of this episode. Make sure you check it out. Okay, let's get into it. Callum, tell us who you are and what you do.
So I'm Callum McGranahan. I'm head of paid social and one of the directors at Social for Good. We're a social media agency that specializes in working for the good guys, is what we call them. It's a lot of charities, nonprofits, and then some purpose-driven commercial organizations as well. So yeah, we mostly help people with things like social media strategy development, auditing, management of their channels, and then a lot of fundraising campaigns as well, all focused on social rather than general marketing services.
And tell me a little bit about what motivates you to do what you do and where you choose to spend your time for 40, though I imagine more like 60 to 70 hours a week.
What motivates us, or what motivates me personally, we rebranded and we were a general social media agency that worked with anyone and everyone. And we started to realize that the work that made us feel like we had the greatest, it gave us the greatest satisfaction, and we felt like we actually made the greatest difference, was when we were working with organizations in the third sector. And it got us to realize that social media, and this isn't really much of a realization, to be honest, this is obviously quite clear to everyone, but social media is massively powerful and can be so impactful for organizations. And often it's organizations like charities and nonprofits that aren't able to leverage that power as effectively as other organizations, not because of a capability issue, but really because of resource. They don't have the time, the budget, or the manpower to put into social, as at least not to the same level that a lot of commercial organizations do. So that's sort of what motivated us, was recognizing that and realizing, okay, these are the organizations that are actually trying to make a real positive impact on the world. This is a free tool, realistically. So social media, unless you're looking at paid advertising, but a lot of the time it's a free tool. And if we can, that has massive impact potential. So if we can help these people deliver greater impact through this tool, then we'll get massive satisfaction from that. Feel like we're helping others to make the world a better place, essentially. So yeah, that's really why we do what we do.
So what I love about Social for Good, and we've talked a little bit about this offline, is that you've really niched down on both your offering and your target clientele. So tell me a little bit about the decision behind this. How did you identify the need to focus, identify what you needed to focus on, and then ultimately have the confidence to make that decision to focus in the first place?
Yeah, I'd love to say that it was all pure business insight and understanding of market trends and things like this. And we knew we were onto a winner from the get-go, but that wasn't the case. As a lot of situations, I think it was luck, really. We recognized, as I mentioned earlier, that this is the work that we like doing. This is the work that we felt we created the greatest impact. And so when it came to lockdown in 2020 and everything stopped for a minute, we just took stock, me and Kerry, the other director, we took stock and thought, okay, things are quieter. We've got some time, that cliche, that time to think on the business rather than in the business and think about what is it that we actually want to be doing. So we recognized that this was the route we wanted to go down. Then I think what happened is making that decision and combining that with a new approach of going to market in conjunction with what we were offering, I think it all just aligned very well. I think it wasn't, like I say, it wasn't necessarily something that we thought through and had forecasts for. It was a case of, okay, these are the people we want to help. They need our help, and we can provide an offer that is way more accessible than a lot of other agencies. We're not looking to get people into long-term retainers. It's more project focused. It's more, how can we support your team to deliver greater impact? Yeah, it was, we knew what we wanted to do. We knew the people we wanted to do it with. And then our offering, just our offering, as well as this, the market conditions, seemed to all combine quite well so that it had a positive impact. But it wasn't necessarily a particularly strategic and insightful initial plan. It was a case of, this is who we want to help. This is what we want to do. Let's give it a go. And it's gone from there, really.
Can you talk at all to how this kind of focus, both in terms of your target clientele and your value proposition, has set you up competitively when bidding for projects against other agencies? Because obviously you're not the only social media organization, social media agency out there. What power does that level of focus and that level of rigor unlock for you when you're in that kind of competitive pitching environment?
One of the most important things that's going to influence any buyer's decision, whether that's an internal, whatever the person is, whatever the decision they're making, what's going to influence their choice and the person that they end up deciding to work with is how confident they are that this person can solve their specific problems. And yes, there are loads of agencies out there, but it's also, I think there's a lot of agencies that don't have the best reputation. The amount of people I speak to who have been burnt in the past is shocking, really. So I think the main, having us sort of focus particularly on this space and the unique challenges that people within this sector face, puts us in a really strong position, because there's that greater level of assurance and confidence that, okay, there's a track record of organizations they've worked with that are very similar, trying to achieve the same things, and I can see the results. Another thing is that we're almost double niched, really. There are other agencies that work in the third sector, of course there are, but often those are full service. So when you're chatting to someone who's specifically looking at developing a social media strategy and they want to, and they're a charity, I think we tend to stand out quite well because of that double niche. It's like just social media and just the third sector, really. So that tends to be something that sets us apart. It's a case of, we understand their specific challenge and we can show proof of solving that specific challenge. And it also means that any outreach that we do and the initial content that they have, it can be far more tailored and far more specific, because it's not a general, let us help you with social media, that I'm sure they get hundreds of times. I get told by people that do respond to me, they get upwards of 50 cold emails trying to sell them marketing services per week. So as niche as you can go, realistically, I think the market is big enough for any organization to be able to go very niche and still carve out a large segment of that market share and be profitable and build their business. But it means that there's so much out there at the moment, so much rubbish when it comes to cold outreach and engaging new prospects. The nicher you can be, the more effective that outreach is going to be.
So let's talk a little bit about your go-to-market. How did you first start winning new business? Was it referrals, word of mouth, ads? Can you tell me a little bit about what worked and what didn't?
Yeah, what we did when we went to market. So we existed as Social Brighton for a number of years before Social for Good. And at that time, we, including the name, we focused quite heavily on Brighton. And although I just said you can go very niche and still carve out a profitable business, if we were just focusing on the third sector and just focusing on Brighton, I think the pool of potential clients would have been far too small. So what we did when we rebranded is we realized that, okay, nobody knows us as Social Forbid. We need to start carving out a bit of a name for ourselves. And realistically, at that time, there was three of us in the team. So very small organization, didn't have much money to put behind things like large ad campaigns. And realistically, we needed to move quicker than we would have been able to by through things like investing in heavily in SEO, where sometimes you're not going to see a return until a bit down the line. So we decided to use SoPro, who I mentioned earlier. We were going to use SoPro, who are a prospecting service, to help us basically find the right people we wanted to engage and reach out to them on my behalf. I think one of the things that made that go-to-market successful is not only SoPro and how well that platform and service is set up, but also the ask that we were reaching out to these people with. I think people get countless emails from social media agencies saying, let us manage your social for you. And it's a difficult ask. First of all, these people don't necessarily know your brand or what it is you're trying to achieve, but also it tends to be a long-term ask. It tends to be a sign us on for a retainer, which is going to be 12 months plus. Whereas what we were doing is we were going out and saying, we understand the specific challenges that charities, nonprofits, purpose-driven organizations face. Most commonly, it's resource. Let us help you leverage the resource you've got to greater impact. So it's not a case of you need to be doing lots more. You need to be investing lots more. It's a case of you need to be focusing on the strategic activities that are going to move the needle. Let's help you do that. But yeah, it's a project ask, really. It's a one-off, and it's not particularly high ticket. And then through that, we built those referrals and we built that word of mouth. We found that the sort of for good space, it is quite small, particularly in charities. And so once you've got a bit of credibility, you've delivered some good projects, it's funny how many people I talk to now, they know us and they've heard of us. And I do not think that would have been the case if we'd stayed as a sort of working with a wider remit of organizations. But when you're specialists in a specific niche, you're targeted in how you engage those people and how you get them to interact with you. Inevitably, they're going to talk. So yeah, definitely started off predominantly cold outreach that was very targeted with a clever offer. And then from that, it's been quite a lot of word of mouth and referrals. Mm. But yeah, so that's how it worked for us.
I'm interested to dig a little bit into the decision to work with a prospecting service like SoPro, because I think a lot of early stage founders and CEOs and leaders of small businesses, if they could use a prospecting service to take that off their plates, they would. But I think what holds a lot of them back is obviously budget and this feeling of I can build some email sequences myself and I just need to get round to it. And then that ultimately leaves them into the state of paralysis where nothing ultimately gets done. And for you and your decision-making, what was that light bulb moment where you thought, you know what, we need to take this part of the project off of our plate and give it to someone so that we can focus on the stuff that only we can do?
Yeah, it's ultimately, there wasn't enough hours in the day for us to do it. At that time, how the work was split was typically Perry, the director, she was delivering a lot of strategy. We had one person internally doing organic social, and then I was doing paid ads. So we were still doing quite a lot of everyone was doing client delivery. Their days were filled, really. There wasn't going to be the opportunity for, I know I wouldn't have got around to doing it and I wouldn't have done it in as effective a way. Yeah, it's taken a while, but I'm definitely now at that point where I know what my strengths are. I know what my weaknesses are, and I'm not going to try and force my way through a weakness when I know it would be better for somebody else to do it for me, somebody who is an expert. It's the same thing we preach, really. Anyone theoretically knows, you know, how to put up an Instagram post. That doesn't mean that you're able to do it in a strategic way that's aligned with your objectives and you can measure the impact of it. So if we're preaching people should work with experts, it felt silly for us not to be practicing that. Yeah, that was realistically, it was a resource issue. I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it as well. And funnily enough, the way we actually got involved in SoPro is back when we were Social Brighton, they were a client of ours. We ran paid advertising campaigns for them on LinkedIn to reach business owners and sales professionals. And it was through working with them, obviously seeing a lot of their content and realizing and a lot of their case studies and realizing how positive a lot of it was. And I thought, this sounds amazing. Oh, I'm going to do this. And yeah, so that's how it started, really. They were a client of ours, and now we're a client of theirs.
Can you talk a little bit to some of the outcomes that have come from using a service like this? There's an obvious one, which is just bandwidth that you've saved, being able to focus on the things that only you can do. What kind of impact has a service like this had on your business, on Social for Good?
Yeah, it's been absolutely massive. I think it's been our primary source of new business won over the last 3 years. And in that time, like I said, when we started working with them, there was three of us. There's now 9 recruiting for our 10th. So it's not massive, but it's moving in the right direction with no external investment or anything. This has all just happened through growth of the organization and the profits and revenue that come with that we can then reinvest into developing the team and building that team out. So it's been massive in terms of organization growth. In terms of numbers, I think I mentioned earlier, like something that we focus on is relatively low ticket projects that people work with us on. We have a few packages when it comes to strategy development, the most expensive of which is just shy of $8,000. So it's not like we're asking people for a completely bespoke new website that's going to have loads of ink. We're not asking people for a long-term retainer. Using that as a way to get your foot in the door, build these relationships, build this credibility. And then often organizations, once you retain you off the back of that, once they've got an understanding of the sort of work you do and the sort of organization you are. If I'm looking at SoPro in terms of, okay, direct initial sale, even that direct initial sale compared to the cost outlay has been profitable for us. But in terms of long-term revenue and recurring revenue, it's been massive as well, because it's allowed us to build those relationships with people that we then have on retainer for sort of two plus years. So yeah, I would say from both how I am able to manage my week in terms of the time that I've won back and the conversations I'm joining is massive, but also in terms of just a return on investment, I would say outside of potentially rebranding to Social for Good, SoPro has been the greatest sort of return on investment activity that we've taken as an organization.
As a buyer of services myself, I'm seeing a massive increase in the production of what looks like crappy AI-generated prospecting emails flooding my inbox. You've already talked a little bit to the power of having a niche and focused offering. I want to talk a little bit about now the kind of importance of personalization and authentic messaging in 2024 for a brand like Social for Good. Can you just share your thoughts on that?
I think you're right, and I'm the same. I see it as a buyer myself. Countless emails that are just terribly written or clearly AI written. And I think that's just going to continue, and there's going to be more of that. The personalization definitely has a positive impact. I know this because the amount of I don't normally respond to emails like this, but something in how you approached it or something in whatever in the email has struck a chord. I get that a lot, which obviously tells you that they're being written well, and they're not being written by me. They're being written by SoPro. So that's really important. But I think you need to be looking at engaging people through multiple touch points. What we do is people get the cold email, then we'll also reach out and engage them via LinkedIn. And then we'll also, the list of prospects that we're engaging, that goes into a list that I share with somebody internally. And then we go and proactively engage with their content on social as well. Just makes sense as a social media agency. Often the people I'm reaching out to are going to be the ones with their eyes on who's engaging with our content on social. And even if they're not, maybe I'm reaching out to the head of comms and there is a comms officer who's managing it. either way, when those conversations come up internally, people are aware of us within the team because we're engaging at multiple different points. So I would say the emails are important and the personalization is important, but I also think when it comes to cold outreach, trying to make that outreach as warm as you can via multiple touch points without necessarily somebody coming back to you yet is still really important. So yeah, I think not putting all of your eggs in one basket, but using that initial outreach as an avenue to then develop a relationship further and engage people on multiple different channels is a really good way to approach it.
As we look at rounding off this interview, I'm keen just to get your final advice that you would give to other business owners in a similar situation to you, SMBs, but growing quickly, on how they can look to improve their sales outreach and lead generation processes. What are the things they should be thinking about?
I think the things that are really important are to truly understand the needs of your clientele. I think it's easy to have a top line idea of what the key pain points of your clients are and have some sort of cookie cutter responses for how they can solve them. But to really dive down into it, and often what we've done in the past, and actually we're looking at doing this again because it's been a while since we have, is conducting interviews with both existing clients and potential ideal clients that we're not working with yet, and not trying to sell them anything, but just trying to understand them. And then going through, okay, how can we help them solve these issues at multiple different levels of sort of input from ourselves. So it could be, how would we do that how would we help solve this issue if they were only able to spend £100? How would we be able to solve this issue if we were able to spend £100,000? And go through each point throughout that. So you can get an idea of, okay, what is it that we can do that can provide the greatest value to them within a budget that aligns with what I was mentioning earlier, that is a low barrier to entry offering that we can give, we know is going to drive great impact and is going to solve a real issue. So I think that's the main thing, is understanding the problem and developing an offer that really well aligns with that within your skill set and remit. And it isn't something that's going to be too difficult or unprofitable for the organization. It needs to be something that's sustainable. And then using that almost as a sort of foot in the door to then build that relationship and develop it further. I think that's the main thing I see people doing wrong, is it's generic emails offering high ticket services. That's not gonna work. You need to understand someone. To even get somebody to have a conversation with you, the offer needs to be fantastic. And then to get them to act even higher, because a lot of the time these people, they're not actively looking. If you get to a position where someone responds and says, oh, that's perfect, I've just been thinking about that, then that's 1 in 100. But realistically, to get somebody to take time out of their day to have a conversation with you, it's difficult. So you really need to be perfect on your value proposition. So that's probably what I would say is the most important thing. Get super, super clear on that. And then start worrying about the outreach, the offer, the audience, the offer need to be the primary focus.
Callum, where can people learn more about you and Social for Good?
They can learn about Social for Good at socialforgood.co.uk. In terms of me, you can find me on LinkedIn, Callum McGranahan. It's a focus of mine this year, and this is being recorded now, so you know, you can hold me to this. Key focus of mine this year is to actually start doing more thought leadership and brand building on LinkedIn. If you go now, it's probably going to be quite dire, but I'm hoping that there will be a lot of content. I'm planning to have a lot of content that I'll be putting out over the coming months. So yeah, connect with me there. That'd be great.
Hopefully we can send thousands of new followers to your profile in anticipation of all of that. But we'll drop the links to all of those profiles and websites in the show notes of this episode. But otherwise, Callum, thank you very much for coming on to B2B Better today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. Cheers, Jason.
So that was a great interview from Callum at Social Good. Thank you, Callum, very much for that. I've now welcomed on my friend Kit Smith, who is the content and SEO manager from SoPro, which we talked about a little bit during that episode. And I've invited him on because Callum shared a lot of really interesting ideas and tactics on how to run better prospecting. And as I've mentioned at the top of this episode, SoPro have just published this amazing State of Prospecting report for 2024 last month. It's one of the biggest and most in-depth looks at how the tactics and trends that are shaping go-to-market prospecting across B2B can be applied to your business. I'm going to drop a link to the report in the show notes of this episode. But Kit, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Jason. Pleasure to be here.
So I'm keen to get your thoughts on whether you think outreach is easier for social for good because of their niche offering. How do you go about bringing a similar approach to outreach when your audience is broader?
Yeah, I really enjoyed Callum saying they are double niche, like just social and just the third sector. And that clearly helps set them apart as a business. It definitely makes their cold outreach simpler. Like it's just easier to make it relevant and tailored and specific for their audience. If you're as niche as them, then that's great. But obviously a lot of businesses are not in that and will have a much broader offering. So to replicate that level of relevancy that social for good can achieve, first of all, you've got to really understand the different profiles in your market. And obviously, Callum talked about the kind of research that they do regularly to understand that themselves. You have to build or access a really good database of contacts with the right information in it and up to date. And then with that good database and good idea of your profiles, you need to segment your list before you start outreach. And then that means that you can create prospecting content for each segment in your audience, and when that's by industry or by persona or however you makes most sense for your business, you can then make that kind of more personalized and make it resonate with that section of the audience. And that way you're going to stand out from that kind of mass cookie cutter approach. Yeah, obviously like other forms of marketing, you focus on the pain points and the benefits specific and to that segment, and then how your solution flexes to specifically meet their needs. So yeah, maybe that takes a little bit more work if your offering is broader, but still very much possible.
In terms of outreach, how can you go about making your messaging stand out?
So one of our main takeaways from the State of Prospecting report is that messages have got to be personalized, they've got to be authentic, they've got to be relevant. And like Callum talked about getting 50 emails a week, and you yourself talked about the rise of badly written emails and the obviously AI generated content. And our like research for the report showed what I think like everyone in is feeling in their own inbox. There's increased competition. There's so many more people using email as a kind of marketing and sales outreach tool. So you do have to stand out. And one of the ways to do that, as we talked about, is that audience research and the segmentation, but actually the content as well. So first of all, personalization, really important. And yeah, obviously that means adding their name and their company name. But you should go further. If you can create your own personalization elements, it's how you use those that can be really clever and really natural. And then, of course, as well as person specific to their name and their job title, you can be persona or industry specific. I've been in content a long time and in my whole career, but I've never written outreach emails. I do all sorts of other stuff, but that is not my kind of skill. And like at SoPro, I read the emails that go out and I really appreciate what a niche writing skill that is to produce natural and personalized outreach emails, like center a level of scale, obviously not that kind of really mass thing, but beyond that kind of 3 a day or whatever. And it's the personalization that is so natural, so conversational, that it really is like a one-to-one email. So yeah, first one, personalization. Second one, authentic, genuine. We did some really fun analysis in the State of Prospecting report and looked at kind of different groups of words and how they impacted the success of emails. And so there were things like groups of words that all show empathy, or they're all optimistic and looking to the future, or ones that created a sense of kind of false urgency or demonstrated social proof. There's a whole load in there. And without kind of focusing on individual words, I think if you read it, you'll see the takeaway is just to be authentic and human, and you've got to strike this right tone. And that, you said yourself about AI, it's only going to get increasingly important because one, there'll be more and more AI, but two, everyone's going to get more and more attuned to AI and how and spotting this isn't a human, this is a robot. That's the second point, authentic and genuine.
During the interview, Callum touched on multi-channel outreach. So can you just share a little bit more about how that can impact campaigns like this one?
Obviously, as a Sobro client, Social for Good have multi-channel prospecting campaigns running, and we tie together multiple channels. We use buyer intent signals as a kind of way of going, okay, this person's engaging with your campaign and therefore let's take another action. So it's a kind of natural nuanced thing. But I think what I thought was really interesting is that as well as that going on itself, Social for Good adding to that by engaging with their prospects' social media content. And obviously that's a really natural thing for them to do given what their business is. But they're able to do that as well because they have a list. The data, that list that Sobro puts together as part of their campaign is their data to keep and use as they wish. So they download that. They can do their own marketing activities off the back of it. So that's, yeah, clearly working really well for them. And so that, again, it just with the combination of what they're doing and combination of what Sobro are doing for them, then it's a really sort of natural campaign where people are seeing you multiple times. And if your brand is seen multiple times by your prospect, and particularly if it's seen across multiple touch points, like different formats, it makes it more memorable. And that's great brand recall, brand awareness. Obviously, that's good. But in this case of sales outreach and tying that directly to sales outcomes, the research shows that if somebody can remember your brand and then a salesperson contacts them, they are more likely to respond positively. So say like on LinkedIn, they're more likely to accept a connection request from a salesperson and to respond and accept an in-mail message from a salesperson. So it has that kind of like direct impact. And yeah, and that's all because it's had this multiple touch point, really quite natural feel. Callum said a really nice line. It's about making your cold outreach as warm as you can with multiple touch points. And I think that really like nails it. The other thing is a multi-channel campaign with multiple people from each kind of target company, like you get in front of multiple stakeholders, and there are more than ever, again, in the report, you'll see that the numbers only kind of going up in terms of those like decision-making units. So when those conversations happen internally, like you're not party to that, everyone would love to be, but you can increase the likelihood that you will come up in the conversation, because if there are four people in that conversation and two of them remember, have seen, been exposed to your campaign, one of them brings it up, the other one's, oh yeah, I've seen those guys as well. So again, in this sort of age of longer buying cycles, of complex decision processes in the companies that you're going after, I think multi-channel has a real impact on that as well.
Kit Smith, thank you very much. And that's it for this episode of B2B Better. Thank you so much for giving me your time this week. If you are a repeat listener, thanks for coming back. If you did take any value out of this interview, please make sure you subscribe, rate, and review in your podcast platform of choice. It really makes a huge difference for an emerging creator like myself. Ugh, this sounded so bad. But I'm going to stick with it because we're here. If you want to learn more about the services at B2B Better, you can visit my website, www.b2b-better.com. A huge thanks to my guest this week. See you all next week.